through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Jake Heaps, Stacy Ross here. It is time for Hype Train. Here's how this works. I have five stories here. They are five hype trains. Y'all are going to tell me whether or not you're boarding it. So these are the latest stories in sports. Are they all hype? Or are there some legs to this story? We're going to figure it out. First train in the station, the Jets should take Devontae Smith, number two overall. Now, this stems from Mel Kiper Jr.'s very, very early draft selection prediction in which he has Smith going number two to the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, Devontae Smith being the Heisman Trophy winner, being a dynamic receiver, I still have my doubts and my questions about him regarding his size. His size at the NFL level concerns me. And I believe that there's going to be a lot of NFL talent evaluators that feel the same way. But the Jets should not be taking a receiver with the number two overall pick. I think Mel Kiper Jr. is crazy for this one. That train can go right on by.
Yeah, I'm not getting aboard this one.
What?
I think Devontae Smith is going to be a great receiver in the NFL. Certainly worthy of a top 10, maybe even top 5 pick. But the Jets are not the team for him. You're the Jets. Sam Darnold, I don't know if you can squeeze anything else out of him than what you've already seen from him, especially when there are quarterbacks that could potentially have a higher ceiling available to you at number two. Also, you've got enough draft capital to go out and get a top 10, top 5 quarterback in Deshaun Watson. I mean, the options outside of Sam Darnold are much more intriguing than keeping him around. You're not going to reach the ceiling that this team could possibly get under Robert Saleh. That's why I am letting this train go by.
I'm letting it go by.
You're thinking of getting on this train?
Here's why I was thinking of getting on it. If you decide to build around Sam Darnold, why not give him more weapons? Although I think that they should address their quarterback situation. They either need to trade Darnold, maybe you take Fields at number two, whatever. I wouldn't be mad necessarily at Devontae going at number three to Miami. I would understand it if it's not there, you're going to fall a little bit, at least out of the top five. I could see him going to the Eagles. I could see him, well, maybe not to Detroit. They'll need a new quarterback. But I would be completely fine, like Curtis said, with him being top 10, top five. If they stay with Darnold in New York, I would understand the selection. I'm not getting on the train, though. Next train. We've been talking about new Seahawks offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. It is his first job as OC, but is there another one very shortly in his future? Here's the hype train. Tell me if you're getting on. Shane Waldron will be a head coaching candidate this time next season. This is the biggest jump of all jumps. You want to talk about being in front of a story? Should the Seahawks extend Shane Waldron now? Jake, what do you think?
I am going to be the epitome of positivity that yes, I am boarding this hype train that Shane Waldron is coming into town. He is going to turn this offense into a consistent top 10 offense, will allow them to have the capabilities of going further into the playoffs than an early wild card exit, an early divisional round. If he's able to orchestrate an explosive offense, Russell Wilson's playing at a high level, let's say like Aaron Rodgers did this last season. You could expect Shane Waldron to definitely be a head coaching candidate this time next season.
Seeing the bar that a lot of coaches seemingly have to clear to become head coaches in this league,
mm-hmm.
It's not that high. Yeah. In fact, a couple weeks ago, Brian Schottenheimer was probably still on some team shortlist for a head coach opening. That's why I'm going to say Shane Waldron will also be a head coach candidate this time next season. Just because it doesn't take a lot to go from coordinator to coach these days.
It doesn't, especially offensive coordinator. I'm not boarding this train out of stubbornness, but if the Seattle Seahawks get back to a semblance of what they were in the first half of the season on offense, if they get to at least the conference title game, he will absolutely get some head coaching interviews. I mean, it helps that he's from the McVay tree. People around the NFL have loved pulling from that coaching staff. And you did have Staley. I mean, he spent a year as DC with them, moved on to head coach. And before that, he was outside linebackers coach. That's a pretty quick ascension, too. I could see it. I'm not boarding the train out of protest.
Next. Out of protest?
Yeah, I want to be different. Next train.
Okay. I'm Stacy. I want to be different.
Sick joke.
Come on. Come on, Stacy.
Wow, is there two Stacys in the studio right now?
I tried being Stacy. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
She didn't fit.
Did not like that.
It's not a hard, a difficult hat to wear, but I wear it nicely.
Immediately regret it.
There were no players elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame this year for the first time since 2013. Curt Schilling led all vote-getters. He was 16 votes shy of that 75% threshold. Barry Bonds was also on there, though he wasn't nearly as close. He had, I believe, 61%. But here's the hype train. We talked about Schilling. Put Schilling aside right now. Barry Bonds should have been voted into the Hall of Fame. Are you getting on the train?
I would have to say no. I am not getting on the hype train. I am not getting into on this with Barry Bonds. And I believe that unless you're telling me that he was a Hall of Famer before he set the single season home run record, then maybe you've got a case. But I think that a lot of people are focusing on that as the reason why Barry Bonds has a great opportunity to get into the Hall. I don't think so.
I don't think you can tell the story of baseball without Barry Bonds.
Ooh.
And it's the Hall of Fame. It's not necessarily the Hall of Good Citizenship. So that's why I'm gonna get on this train.
Wow.
I think Barry Bonds is absolutely a Hall of Famer.
Wow.
And we're just going to see over the next 10 to 20 years or so, some of the game's very best players not get elected to the Hall of Fame. And it's going to be ridiculous. It's already ridiculous that Pete Rose isn't in. It's ridiculous that Barry Bonds isn't in. We're not going to see Roger Clemens. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa are close to falling off the ballot. Alex Rodriguez, yeah, he got suspended twice, but you can't tell the story of baseball without him either. Like, these are guys that are the faces of an
era.
You
were in a Kanye West song.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. That alone should get you in there. I'm also on this
train. Early Kanye West. Not so much recent Kanye
West.
No,
here's another hit. Yeah. Barry Bonds.
Early.
I also think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I completely understand why when we talk about PED usage, it comes into question. There are many other players who are in the Hall that would say, that's cheating. I had to work so much harder. But Barry Bonds was so good. He was so good. And like Curtis said, revolutionized part of baseball. You can't tell the story without him. He might be the exception to the rule in this case. I say put him in. Next train. Now, we're going to get into this a little bit more in the timeline with some sound from Les Snead. Before I get to that, here's the hype train, a bit of a preview. Jared Goff's future with the Rams is in question, much like Jimmy G's future with the San Francisco 49ers. Two teams with great pieces around the quarterback, fantastic defenses, suddenly have the future of their franchise star in question. Now, we've talked a bit about the potential of a guy like Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers landing with the 49ers. We've kind of glossed over Jared Goff's future a little bit, but that was brought up with Snead. Again, I'll get to that sound later, but here's the question in the hype train. Tell me if you're getting on it. Jared Goff returns to the Rams next year.
Yeah, I'm getting on this hype train. It's not even a question for me. Two reasons. Number one. You're really going to walk away from Jared Goff this next season when he has a $65 million dead cap? I'm pretty sure that that's probably a situation that you can't just walk away from. And then answer me this. Who in the NFL right now looks at Jared Goff and says, ooh, I want him. I'll trade a first-round pick. I'll trade second-rounders and third-rounders for Jared Goff.
Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien's with
not
Alabama.
In the NFL, right? I know, but it was a good joke. It was there for the taking.
I know. So nobody is your answer.
Low-hanging fruit.
So the only thing that you can do if you're Sean McVay and the Rams is let Jared Goff know that you were disgusted by his performance this last season and tell him that he has to come in and earn his job. He has to come in and prove it. John Wolford is waiting in the wings to take your job if you don't come ready to go. That is the only thing that they can do. They can make as much noise as they want about Jared Goff's future. Guess what? He will be back in a Rams uniform in 2021.
Yeah, I will get on that train as well, just because who are the takers for Jared Goff? Mm-hmm. You'd have to be so desperate for a quarterback, and you look at the sea of quarterbacks that are going to be available this offseason, Jared Goff doesn't even crack the top five of those guys. There are plenty of options for quarterback-needy teams. Don't settle for Jared Goff. Keep the Rams a bad team and don't help them out.
Man, it's a bummer. I mean, not only would they have a massive, massive dead cap in 21, $65 million, got a $34 million cap hit. They are in a tough situation. I agree. The problem is you need to find a trade partner if you want to offload some of that and restructure a bit of that. Even then, you might be stuck with some of that dead cap. I mean, they just signed up for a bad deal. I think their best bet is to try to do everything they can to just make Goff better. The offensive line was pretty solid. I mean, I don't know what else you could do, but they are going to have to try their hardest.
This is, to me, this is on Goff. Goff has to step up. That Goff has to step up. It's him or nobody. And I think that the Rams have tried to do an awful lot to try and help him out. But he has got to step up.
Now, what if what he needs, I'm also getting on the train that he'll be back. What if what he needs is someone like Todd Gurley again? He was at his best when they had a running back that was leading the league.
You know what I think they need more than that, though? Because they have Cam Akers. They've got Darrell Henderson.
They've got great receivers, great protection, a great coach.
They have, I think that they have pretty much all the things that you need to make them win. But when their offense was truly just bonkers, what did they have? They had a legit deep threat. And I think that Robert Woods is a deep threat that a lot of teams could utilize and get great stuff out of. Cooper Kupp, you could use him in the deep down the field as well. But when they had Brandon Cooks, a legitimate deep threat to complement those two guys, that's when this offense was so darn explosive. And it's hard to get guys like that. It's hard to find guys like that. But until they can, I think that this offense is going to be very similar to what we saw this last year, because I just don't think Jared Goff has it in him.
The erasure of Tyler Higbee will not be forgotten. Not by this girl.
Oh. I apologize.
I know a tight end wouldn't be your deep threat. It just felt like the best name to attach to that. Moving on. Last train. Jake was giving me a hard time for this the other day, and yet in the same sentence that he said my mask chain was lame,
yes,
you also fully admitted to wearing a fanny pack to theme parks.
Sure did.
So here's the hype train. Tell me if you're getting on it. There's only one right answer. Mask chains are more respectable than fanny packs. If anyone doesn't know, the mask chain are kind of like, if you've ever seen someone of any age wear a chain for their glasses so they don't lose their glasses or whatever. It's like that, but for your mask. I have one. I got it from Nordstrom. It's adorable.
Wow.
It's gold. It complements my outfits. Yeah, yeah. Well, someone said, at least say where you got it from. And I was like, well, it's fancy. Yeah.
I think
$4.99.
The difference in this conversation, as I very much recall, is that Stacey was trying to pass this off as cool, that this mask chain is cool and hip and trendy.
It is.
Teens wearing mask chains?
Teens?
Fanny packs?
Teens.
Well,
they're the culture setters.
Yeah. Fanny packs are actually very trendy. If you want to talk about trends, fanny packs are
trendy.
They
are trendy right now,
but I also don't try to act like I know that when I put on a fanny pack that I don't immediately turn into Dork Dad. I know I do, and I accept it, but I'm not trying to go around and say, hey, look how cool my fanny pack is.
Well, that's because I make fashion choices. You are a practical dresser.
Well, exactly, but the chain isn't fashion forward.
It is, Jake.
It's not. So I am going to let that train pass right on by, because the phrasing of this question is loaded. Mask chains are not more respectable than fanny packs. Fanny packs are highly respectable. They are highly, highly convenient when you need them the most. They are dependable.
The text line is sounding off with their support of fanny packs. 206, fanny packs for the win. You can carry sensible, low-carb snacks. And someone else said, by the way, Jake, the thing that you call it, just to keep it very masculine, is a tactical waist bag.
Oh, I will start implementing that. I like that, a tactical waist bag. When I go to theme parks, I absolutely will strap on that tactical waist bag, because you know what the other thing is nice? Is I don't have to go to one of those lockers and put my phone and my wallet in there. I can go right up in the line.
Where's your mask
right up onto
now?
That ride with my fanny pack while you're trying to put all these other things. I am way ahead of you in the line.
Where's your mask right now, Jake?
My mask is right here.
Yeah, on a table covered in germs.
No,
we disinfect it all the time. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm just saying, I feel like maybe, if anything else, they're equally fashionable.
I feel just as safe, as confident, and you know what? Right. I don't have to wear around an 80-year-old librarian chain around me.
A lot of young people do this, Jake. Let's get to NFL headlines. It's not NFL headlines. It's Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Stacey is shooketh.
Shit.
First down, Jake. What are three things you expect Shane Waldron to immediately improve?
I expect him to immediately improve protection number one. I believe that he will help out this offensive line by putting them in good positions. This will not be an offense that is solely oriented around deep seven-step drop pass plays and deep play action pass plays. It will certainly be a part of the system, and they will attack downfield. Make no mistake about that. But I believe that this offense will be better at running the football. They will be better at being able to get the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands in structure, which will make that protection better. And I'm also hoping that this won't be Shane Waldron's doing, but that John Schneider and Pete Carroll will invest in that offensive line. But overall, Shane Waldron, I believe, will make the protection better for his quarterback right out of the gate. I believe that the short to intermediate pass game is going to be significantly better. They will actually be able to have answers. And, Stacey, they will not be surprised. When teams want to try and take away the deep ball away from them, they will have answers to attack underneath and be able to do that without looking like an offense that has completely lost their way. I think that's the second thing that Shane Waldron will bring to the table. And third, they are going to be in attack mode 24/7. Tempo, tempo, tempo. And I cannot wait to watch that.
Second down.
Someone said Jake needs the life coach that teaches you not to be your parents.
Oh, no. The Progressive commercials?
It's good.
Do we need to be reminded to live, laugh, love?
Yes.
If he tried to take away
Jake,
my fanny pack,
how many pillows do you need?
It'd be over. It'd be over. Oh. I'd walk out of that session immediately.
Jake, do we need socks with our sandals on the beach, Jake?
No.
No.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Second down. Stacey, what part of Shane Waldron's coaching history is most intriguing to you?
Now, I know we're going to be and have been talking a lot about his time with the LA Rams, but I was actually very intrigued reading about his time with the New England Patriots. This is where his career really started. So he initially, at the age of 23, joined that Patriots coaching staff just as an operations intern. He spent a year or so doing that, then was later promoted to the operations assistant, where he helped with some game planning stuff. I mean, 24, 25 years old, you're already helping with that. That's pretty impressive. He then followed former Patriots OC Charlie Weiss over to Notre Dame. He was there from 2005 to 2007. So then I started reading more about just basically Weiss installing that EP offensive system there. And I know that's something that that Waldron was kind of, you know, coaching under, you know, years and years ago, almost 20 years ago, isn't necessarily going to make its way into Seattle's system. In fact, if he had just been coming from this system, you still wouldn't be guaranteed he'd be carrying any kind of game plan with him. The majority of that game plan would probably still be something Pete Carroll would dictate, and then Waldron would get to add some of his own stuff. But I do like the strengths and focus of that offensive system. The idea being that you not only maximize effectiveness in cold weather, but you also have an emphasis on the run game and short pass game, which is what Jake has been talking about when it talks to things that they need. It also just makes things easier on the quarterback. Again, this is a system, it's an offensive system that certainly predates Waldron's time as OC, but I just really hope that some of those concepts are what he brings.
Third down. Jake, will the offense be a product of Waldron's vision, or will Carroll still be heavily involved?
No, this will be a product of Waldron's vision. You didn't hire Shane Waldron outside of the norm, outside of what you are comfortable with, which is hiring guys that have been head or offensive coordinators before, who have a history of calling plays before, and have a history of a very, very strong run game, that's actually what their focus is. And when Brian Schottenheimer came into town, everybody knew why he was getting the job, because he did have a quarterback background, but more importantly, he was a guy that was known for executing the vision of a defensive-minded head coach like Rex Ryan, who wanted to run the football. That's why Pete Carroll wanted to bring Brian Schottenheimer in. This is a different feel, a different version of what Shane Waldron will bring to the table. This is an offense that is innovative, on the cutting edge, and is highly sought after around the league. And you're going to bring this guy in because you want to implement that to accentuate the talents of your franchise quarterback, a top three talented quarterback, and also some of the explosive playmakers that you have in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
We've got ESPN's Bill Barnwell joining us at the top of the hour to keep talking about the Shane Waldron hire and take a look around the rest of the league at some of the latest news there. There's a fourth down we didn't have time to get to. We're going to get back to that in about 15, 20 minutes at 12:45, specifically what players should be excited about with this new offensive coordinator. So that's coming up at 12:45. Before any of that, there's a college coach who just made a very unusual decision. We're trying to figure out whether it's admirable or absolutely insane. That's next on Jake and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Jake and Stacey. This is how it works. We read you the top stories that you're going to see in your own Twitter timelines. When you see any you want us to include, want to make us aware of, or want to include in the timeline, tag us at JTHeaps9, at Stacey Ross. Getting things started with some sound from a press conference that Rams GM Les Snead had with the LA Rams media about Jared Goff's future. Cut number four, this is what he had to say when asked if Goff will be back in 2021.
So you can't say at this moment that Jared Goff will be on the team in 2021.
What I can say is Jared Goff's a Ram in this moment. And I said it's way too early to speculate. Future, that's a beautiful mystery.
A beautiful mystery. Imagine.
Did he just steal Aaron Rodgers' line?
Is that Aaron Rodgers' line?
Yes, he said that before the NFC Championship game. He said his future is a beautiful
mystery. Oh my God. Are the Rams trading for Aaron Rodgers? Wow, Jake, you just spelled it out. All right.
I don't know how you jumped
to that
conclusion.
Howdy, if you're listening, go ahead and make the cut right now. Rams trading for Aaron Rodgers.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there is a ripoff in terms of what Aaron Rodgers said, and Les Snead is now using it for his own description of his quarterback. I don't think it's really that much of a mystery. You can't cut him. I mean, he has $60 million in dead cap on his contract this year. Tell me who is going to trade for Jared Goff. The only thing that you could do is legitimately bring in somebody that you feel would be an upgrade over Jared Goff. That's the only thing that you could do.
Yeah, I'm thinking like baseball versions of trades where it's like, what if you add cash? You can't.
Cash considerations.
No, seriously, I'm trying to think of like, how would you make a trade package with Jared Goff more intriguing, and it would be like throw in Aaron Donald. I mean, there is no way to make a team say, yeah, we'll give up our quarterback for that. He also carries a $35 million cap hit this year. I really do think their only option forward is to hope that he just gets better. And I think that one of the ways you do that is by just finding, maybe this is Cam Akers, but is finding someone as close to peak Todd Gurley as you possibly can. I know he's a rare talent, and that is far easier said than done, but that was Jared Goff at his best.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, this was important. They also had a great deep threat.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But, I mean, look, you've got so much weaponry on that offense. You should be able to make it work. I mean, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, those two guys are dynamic receivers, very, very good and talented receivers. You had Tyler Higbee, you had Gerald Everett. I mean, those are guys that would be frontline guys for a lot of teams around the league that are very versatile. So I don't say that to say that Jared Goff didn't have weapons. He had guys to throw to. But when you talk about the magic of what 2017 was, that's what it was. They had all that plus Brandon Cooks to run deep down the field and take the top off, and certainly it made Sean McVay more aggressive.
Now, heading into this timeline, I said that there was a college coach who made a very unusual decision. We're trying to figure out if it's admirable or insane. Well, here's that story. Former Utah State head football coach Gary Anderson has turned down, Jake, a $2.7 million buyout. Still owed to him. This is not the first, but the second time in his career he's done that. He also turned down, if you can remember this, a couple years ago, a $12 million buyout from Oregon State in 2017. Now, I personally think this is admirable. I mean, it's rare. I'm curious to know what you think about it. When I was speaking about it with Curtis Rogers earlier in the Sports Pit, Curtis, you weren't taking that route. You were like, it's just weird.
It's, yeah.
I mean,
turn down $14 million in guaranteed money to not do anything. You just have to stay at home to collect this money.
But what if the idea that he's saying is, I didn't earn that money? I don't want buyout money. I didn't earn it. It's not my money. It wasn't a fit, right? There was two different explanations.
Yeah, it is your money, though, because it's designated for you.
Correct. It's what you signed in your contract. So in the contract, when you originally written it up, then don't have a buyout clause. I mean, it's as simple. If you think that, if I don't deserve the money that is left on my remaining contract, then don't have your agent write up a buyout clause. I mean, it's pretty simple. So I'm with you, Curtis. I think it's really weird. I think it's weird that if you get fired and you turn down that clause, I don't necessarily think it's admirable. I think it's bizarre.
You don't think it's something where it's like, hey, I'm going to let you guys keep that money? Like it's kind of cool.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I really don't.
Okay.
I mean, it's a business. It's a business at that point. I mean, I just like in anything else, you had a contract, you were guaranteed X number of years and they decided to fire you and it's part of the contract. It's signed, sealed, delivered. They knew what they were signing up for.
I want to get back to that Jared Goff story quickly because I overlooked a tweet from Ian Rappaport. This is his report from a bit earlier today. He said about Jared Goff, we talked about Les Snead's comments, that it's going to be a beautiful mystery as to what they managed to do with him. Ian Rappaport said that if they do not trade Goff, and none of us are really expecting them to do that, that there will be an open quarterback competition.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily surprising, but now what we're doing is we're talking about quarterbacks that could end up there, not the stars that you're going to acquire via trade, because they also don't have a ton of draft capital to trade. So this maybe even isn't like a Matt Stafford or whatever. This would be someone like, could Derek Carr end up somewhere? Could Marcus Mariota end up somewhere? I don't know what their contract situations are. Is there a quarterback who might be looking for more of a second chance?
Mm-hmm.
That would be in there competing. I don't know the Rams.
There could be. There could be if they're willing to be aggressive. I mean, Sean McVay, Les Snead, they've been very aggressive in their tenure there together with the Rams. They don't sit back and wait. So I would not be surprised if they ended up bringing somebody else in from the outside. I think that if they really think that Jared Goff is the one piece that's holding them back, his contract, unlike the approach that the Eagles are having with Carson Wentz, McVay and Snead might be smart in saying, look, we know what this is. We know that this is a lost cause, and we're not going to waste time trying to make this work and make this fit. We're going to try to upgrade the position, and it might not be a huge upgrade this year, but we're going to get by. And I would not be surprised by that at all. But I also do believe you're making this message as clear as day to Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm.
Your performance, the way you handled, the way you were behind the scenes, the way your production was on the field was unacceptable. We will not accept that or tolerate it. You need to change your approach or else you will no longer be the quarterback of our franchise.
All right, last story here. Got about a minute left. The Seahawks have now released a statement about Chad Wheeler. So about 20 minutes ago, we told you that there was a report from Adam Schefter that Wheeler would not be rejoining the team. So this officially from Seahawks PR, I'm just going to read it. The Seahawks are saddened by the details emerging against Chad Wheeler and strongly condemn this act of domestic violence. Our thoughts and support are with the victim. Chad is a free agent and no longer with the team. And then they add, if you're experiencing domestic violence, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And then they add below that, we encourage Chad to get the help he needs. And then they add a mental health hotline. And that, I'm assuming, is tied to the report that he had been off of medication for bipolar disorder, I think.
Right. I believe that this is the appropriate response for the Seahawks. I wish this came at least a day sooner.
Yeah.
Like, I think that this is a response that needed to happen a day sooner. It doesn't make the response any less significant, in my opinion, or the statement itself, the words that were written in there, meaningful, because I believe that they are. But also the Seahawks just sitting back there and people saying and tagging the Seahawks, this is, you know, your guy. No, he's not. He's not our guy. He's a free agent. I would have liked to have seen them step ahead of that a little bit further and to make a statement like this sooner rather than, you know, later in this circumstance. But I'm glad they came out and made a statement at all.
All right, ESPN's Bill Barnwell is going to join us in about 20 minutes. Before we get to him, there's a question that I'm going to bring back up. What Seahawks offensive players should be excited about this new offensive coordinator? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
I think I've had too much coffee today.
You think that's what it is?
You've been down in those cold brews
every day.
Like crazy.
Stacey, around the 1 o'clock hour, just is jittery.
Like it's, welcome back to Jake and Stacey. Here's what we're talking about today.
Yes.
That's how I feel.
You need to take
Jake,
it
you
easy.
Mentioned an important point. We've been talking about Shane Waldron, and you said, you know what? Credit to Pete Carroll. We've been talking about Pete Carroll meddling a little bit. There are many facets to Pete Carroll, his culture building, his coaching, that I personally have loved covering. And there are other parts that I've thought, is this going to be rearing its head and causing some bigger issues? And one of them was meddling with offensive play calling. And he admitted to doing that in the Rams game, the loss in the divisional round, wild card round. I wish it was the divisional round. And he's talked about doing it at other times. We've talked about him doing it. So we've had our fair share of criticism about Carroll, but this is a point to give him props. Why is that?
I think it's a point to give him props because how much conversation have we had in this town that the ability to hire the next guy is drastically viewed as one that Pete Carroll is going to screw this up, that Pete Carroll is going to mess this up because he's going to find a yes man and he is going to find somebody that just wants to run the football and you know, he's the guy that's going to hold this team back from progressing forward. I believe we had some of those fears ourselves, Stacey, on this show, that we, as we've talked about that search and the new direction for this team, is that a fear that we had? And I believe that we did. But fear and reality, I believe, were two different things all along for Pete Carroll in this process. Mm-hmm. I believe Pete Carroll realized how important this offensive coordinator hire is for their team, for their quarter, for his quarterback, for DK Metcalf, to maximize the talent that they have had. And to Pete Carroll's credit, I think that as he watched the second half of the season, I believe he has some ownership in this as well as to why the offense took a step back in the second half of the season. But to watch your coordinator to ineffectively be able to manage and call the game and be able to adjust to their to opponents, I believe had to have been extremely frustrating for Pete Carroll. And to sit back and to watch that unfold and to watch that game plan come together against the Rams the way it did and never adjust had to have been hard. So I believe that Pete Carroll probably looked at what he needed to do, and he was all in on this. That's why this process took longer than before. That's why he was willing to wait and wait and wait and wait. And I felt like Tom Hanks in Castaway on an island, and I'm growing a beard. And
taking your own tooth out.
I've become friends with the volleyball that I've named Wilson.
Right.
I I'm losing my mind. I think a lot of people are losing their minds going, what's going on? But I also believe that through the process, Shane Waldron was interviewed last week. From my understanding, that interview went extremely well. However, they still wanted to wait because there were two guys in Ken Dorsey and Luke Getsy that they still wanted to interview and see if they had a chance to interview them if they had not advanced further into the playoffs. That, to me, is encouraging. They exhausted all of their options. They saw every name that was on the board that they were interested in and interviewed. And they came back to settling in on Shane Waldron was the guy for them. So, to me, that is something that you have to give Pete Carroll a lot of credit in this hiring process and allowing your quarterback to be a part of that.
Exactly. And now, this doesn't mean that he's handing over full reins to his offensive coordinator. And honestly, like, I don't know how many coaches hand over full reins of anything to their offensive or defensive coordinators. I think most head coaches like to be involved. I think the assumption has just been,
to a degree,
but the assumption has always been, if you're Andy Reid, if you're Kyle Shanahan, if you're Sean McVay, you're going to have more of an input on the side of the ball that you have more history with. And so the assumption has always been, not only why is Pete Carroll involved as much, but also, like, hey, let's not figure this out on a fourth down attempt when we're running out of play clock.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly right. And when you have guys, the names that you just mentioned, they don't mess with the other side of the ball, Stacey. They don't mess with it at all. They hire and empower those guys to own that side of the ball and to implement their vision and their style and to execute it to the best of their abilities. And it worked out pretty well for them because they were going out there and trying to hire innovative guys, right? And I think that when you look at what Pete Carroll has done with Shane Waldron, you are not making this hire so that you can put your stamp, your traditional Pete Carroll stamp, on the offense. You are doing this because you believe in what Shane Waldron brings to the table. What he brings is something different, unique, that you haven't had before, and you're going to allow him to execute that. However, I still believe Pete Carroll will be involved in terms of in-game decisions on fourth down, as most head coaches are, and I do think you're going to find some times of micromanaging a little bit, getting in the headset of Shane Waldron and saying, I want to run the ball, I want to pass the ball. That is something that I hope that Pete Carroll has the ability to pull back from. Because if there's any one mistake or flaw that I believe that Pete Carroll has, yes, in-game management is one of them. Fourth down, situational football at times, I think he has struggled with. Clock man, timeouts. But it's more so of the fact of getting in the headset of your offensive coordinator too often. And I'm hopeful that Shane Waldron comes in here and gives Pete Carroll the confidence where he can see that he can pull back from that.
Now, I wanted to squeeze in a question from Four Down Territory we had earlier. We did not have time to get to it, and I loved it. This was inspired by a conversation from Danny and Gallant earlier this morning. It was, which Seahawks offensive players should be excited about this new hire? Now, I actually agree with what Danny said, that yeah, you know, there's plenty of people to point to immediately, but I think the guys that are going to be wanting to be more involved in a more diversified pass game and in intermediate and short pass game, the tight ends. That's a position group that should be advocating for more involvement, working toward more involvement, and to help take some of the pressure off of Russell Wilson when the deep ball is the only option they're turning to. Open up the middle of the field. What are you doing? I said the tight ends. I agree with Danny on that one. How about
you? Yeah, 100%. One of the other things that I'm really excited about is when you look at the scheme that Shane Waldron has been a part of. What they've been able to do is they've been able to create multiple successful mindless plays. They've been able to create layups. They've been able to get easy completions for Jared Goff. And that means quick screens. That means running back screens. That means quick game, developing guys that are open in the short pass game. They've been able to have plays where Russell Wilson, Stacey, doesn't need to be a hero on every single play. That if he has 25 or 32 or 40 dropbacks in the game, right, whatever, that he doesn't need to be a hero on every single attempt or feel like that he has to. At the end of the year last year, guarantee you that's probably how he felt at some point in time.
Well, that's what's going to be happening when it's like everything we do is going to be make or break it based on this deep passing attempt. Like, he's a great deep passer, but that can't be your only shot at moving the chains.
No, it can't be. And it can't be a one-trick pony. And guess what? You look at what they were able to do with Cooper Kupp, what they were able to do with Robert Woods. They were able to move those guys all over the place and be able to get fine completions for them in a variety of different ways. So when I talk about it from a schematic standpoint, and you talk about it from what they'll be able to bring, what Shane Waldron will be able to bring to the table, not just for Russell Wilson, not just for Pete Carroll, but for DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and the rest of this group, I think everybody should be very, very thrilled about the direction that this offense can go in under Shane Waldron.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk to ESPN's Bill Barnwell. There are a lot of things I want to know. First of all, I want to know what he thinks about Shane Waldron as the Seahawks' new OC. I want to know what he thinks about Jared Goff's potential future, whether or not he thinks the Seahawks can make a lot of important moves this offseason with so little draft capital and cap space. All kinds of questions. If you guys have any you want to go ahead and add, go ahead and text us now. Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. Bill Barnwell is next.